Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Before we get into the podcast today, I just want to give everybody a reminder that we held last week the UK Investor Magazine Investment Trusts Conference, and the video presentations for those investment trusts are now on the video section for the UK on the UK Investor Magazine website. So do check those out. There's three investment trusts in there, varying underlying assets, and well worth reading if only you want to get a good macro outlook from some of the fund managers there. So today's podcast, we're going to be discussing, as usual, a number of key market themes, as well as a number of UK equities. And to do that, kindly, we're once more joined by Alan Green. Alan, thanks for being with us today.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
So, Alan, we're now looking at a market which is becoming increasingly volatile. It's the same story, though. We've discussed it on the podcast many times this year. It's the prospect of increasing interest rates, not only here in the UK, but in the US and other major central banks. It's raising fears of liquidity in markets, raising fears that the era of easy monetary policy is coming to an end. But we're seeing, Alan, you know, from day to day, we're seeing very sharp rallies, and then we're seeing very sharp moves to the downsides. You know, as people are taking different elements of the macro picture, people looking at inflation data, which obviously supports higher interest rates, then people are looking at the sell-offs in markets and thinking, well, maybe if we start to see downside in equities, the central banks, in particular the Federal Reserve, will hold off for fear of disrupting the financial markets. In your view, Alan, would you be a buyer of the dips at the moment, or would you be selling the highs in markets?
I'd be a selective buyer of the dips, John. I think there are companies that will benefit from higher interest rates, and certainly the one of the companies we're going to talk about this morning is one such beneficiary. But I think we've got the situation in Ukraine that looks set to be a long drawn out conflict, and of course what that means is that Russian gas supplies, Russian commodity supplies, in fact Russian supplies per se, are off the table. So we have to find a way to source alternative supplies, and whether the oil comes from Saudi, the oil and gas comes from Saudi or elsewhere, or we can extract more from the North Sea, we still need to be net importers of oil and gas. So that's got to be resolved. And I think once there is a sense that the world's starting to get on top of that supply switch issue, then I think we'll see inflation peak and start to come down. But of course, it's driving up the price of everything else. We've got food prices through the roof. We've got and of course, it's going to make the cost of living higher. So that's going to have a knock-on effect into the property market eventually, because people think, well, I can't now afford to buy the house I wanted to buy because the cost of living has gone up. And also, I'll be paying more on my mortgage unless I can get a special fixed rate deal. So there are all those knock-on effects that run on through. But there are still opportunities out there, and there are opportunities. And I think, there are certain fundamentals are unchanged. And I mean, as listeners to this podcast will know, I am a commodities fan, and I think there's a very strong case made stronger by Russian commodities being taken off the table for commodities supplying the new technology industries such as the EV industry, clean technology, and of course, you know, some economies are recovering from COVID still, and the spend that didn't take place during the COVID and lockdown is now being made, and of course that's infrastructure. We've got the $1.9 trillion US infrastructure budget announced by Biden that will consume vast quantities of iron, steel and other raw commodities. So there's a very strong backdrop there still, And there are selected companies that will flourish during high inflation periods. So, and of course, you know, within that, you've got financials too. Let's not forget the big banks are now earning more money on deposit as a result of the higher interest rates. And that's a factor to consider too. So savers may well be tempted back to the banks to leave their money with the banks rather than putting it elsewhere because they can get a better rate of return.
Indeed. You mentioned there the cost of living crisis that's ongoing. And do you feel that the market isn't really appreciating what this could mean, not only for the UK economy, but the global economy, if this rambles on towards the end of the year? And could this lead to further downside in the markets? Or do you feel some of the volatility that we're seeing now is really the markets pricing that in? And maybe looking at it, thinking, okay, we're going to have a tough period for a few months, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the case, John. I mean, markets always look 6 to 9 months ahead, so it's anticipating, I think, upcoming volatility. But you know, once there are signs that we're starting to get on top of the of energy prices, and most importantly, energy supply, and of course, this applies to countries throughout Europe, some of whom are heavily reliant on Russian oil and gas. So this is very much, once there are signs that's in place, then I think we'll start to see inflation cool and the markets will progress. I mean, there are so many strong fundamentals driving growth that unless there is a real contraction in the markets, and I simply can't see that happening. I think there are too many strong factors within the markets. I think we're going to see greater volatility. So if you're a day trader, I think we're going to see day traders in the market now should do very well over the next 6 months. But for investors, be selective. Look at the stocks that are going to benefit from the current inflation crisis and energy crisis, and you'll be okay.
Indeed. So you mentioned growth there, Alan, in certain sectors, and we're going to discuss now two companies which are producing just that in growth in their top line. So two relatively well-known companies we're going to discuss here, real blue-chip companies, the first of which is ITV. Alan, looking at the figures this morning and the market reaction, this seems to have been taken quite well by the markets.
Indeed. I mean, ITV, of course, long-standing British media company, holds regional TV licenses across the UK, and it's the oldest and largest commercial terrestrial TV network in the UK. But of course, ITV is renowned for its production facilities and its studios, and it's evolving into new age technology pretty competently. And the company announced a 70% increase in revenues for the first quarter of the current year. Saw double digit growth across media, entertainment, and the studio business, which is very strong. Second quarter advertising spend is expected to fall because, of course, last year's European Football Championships represented the bulk of revenues from the second quarter last year. But it's launching a free ad-funded streaming service called ITVX in the final quarter of the year, which the group says is expected to result in at least $750 million of extra revenue by 2026. So you know, ITV has really adapted and altered its business well to suit the digital age, it's famous for some excellent productions. Of course, it's selling some of the big productions all over the world. You know, series like Downton Abbey and all the rest of it have done so well over the years, and they're being sold on. ITV is making an awful lot of money from this. So I think so long as it maintains its current business plan and evolves, continues to evolve in this way, I think once the digital stream comes online, as it were, we're going to see probably increased growth from the group in the coming years.
So you obviously mentioned the streaming side of the business there, and it's particularly interesting because, you know, not too long ago we saw the figures from Netflix and the resultant move in the markets, you know, some sort of 30% down after they released their figures. I mean, is there a danger that maybe ITV are a little bit late to the streaming game? Because there's so many options out there. Of course, you know, there's Disney, there's Amazon Prime, Netflix, of course. They're obviously bringing the BritBox. They're obviously bringing this into a time where, you know, it is a competitive landscape. But at the same time, because they have the strength in their ITV Studios business, which is obviously providing significant revenue for them and a very welcome increase in that revenue in the most recent period, do you think that gives their streaming offering a little bit more in the way of cost efficiencies and a little bit more in the way of chances of success going forwards?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Netflix obviously blazed a trail in this area, but everyone else is getting in on the game too. And I think you've just summed it up. I mean, of course, we see Netflix productions all over the country, some great productions. And in fact, I live in Seaford, right next to the Seaford Head. And as I speak, there's a huge production taking place, funded by Netflix, on top of Seaford Head, which is that there are hundreds of trucks up there, and it's a huge production. They must be spending millions and millions on it. But ITV's production historically has been very well received, has a huge audience. So I think ITV will further erode Netflix's or the success of Netflix in this country, because it's got such a great backlog of material. And, you know, some of the world's most innovative series producers around today.
Yes, it's going to be very interesting to see how that side of the business develops, as well as how the advertising revenue progresses from this point forward, because there's some very respectable figures from the advertising business as well. And it's been interesting to see whether that's able to be continued throughout 2022. So, Alan, the next company that we're going to discuss now is definitely one that's seeing the benefits of moving past the pandemic, as well as maybe a company that's benefiting from food price inflation, in Compass Group. Again, a very positive reaction in the market this morning. Last time I checked, shares were up over 10%. What's been driving that move?
It's had a great morning, John. Shares currently up just under 8%. Given the company a market cap of 32 billion, shares have traded as high as £18.23 on the year, and as low as just under £14. So yeah, it's had a very strong morning. And of course, Compass is the eponymous contract food services group, huge company, employing well over 500,000 people around the world, based in the UK in Chertsey, of course. It's benefiting. I mean, the company said this morning, first half underlying revenues in at 11.6 million, which represented an organic increase of just under 38%, and up 99% on pre-pandemic levels, which is astonishing. Operating profit at 673 million. That's on the back of the high revenue, but also on the back of this and the current momentum within the business. Despite the pressures of inflation, the full year guidance has been raised, with revenue growth expected to be 30% higher on the full year. And of course, this is driven by the rising cost of food. Means, you know, businesses are looking at what they're doing and taking the decision to outsource. And of course, with Compass Group's huge reach and its economies of scale, it's still able to operate its outlets extremely effectively and still generate decent levels of profitability. So I think going forward, I think the group are very confident in the outlook, and operating margins at around 7%. That's pretty good for a company of the size. And of course, on the back of this, the shares have risen. A 9.5p interim dividend announced with the numbers, and also the group's got going to spend some of its cash pile on a 500 million share buyback. So of course, that's going to add further value, taking shares out of the market. I think it's going to be one of the beneficiaries of high inflation. So certainly, you know, with the outlook that we've got, with the 9-month outlook we were talking about just now, I think Compass should have a very good summer. And you know, it's it's probably worth getting in there before the ex-div date.
Yes, I mean, obviously that dividend's very attractive there, and you know, a very solid set of results. But just looking quickly at the valuation, Alan, for, you know, profit for the half year, 480 million. If we crudely annualise that, and maybe look at, you know, some increase in that. If we say ballpark figure, billion profit, they have a market cap of 30 billion at the moment. Yeah. So relatively high price to earnings valuation. I mean, is that something that could come under threat if they start to see you know, increased food inflation prices, which maybe erodes their own margins? Obviously, they had that the benefit there of people looking to outsource and use their services. And given that, you know, we could see a bit of a downturn in the economy, I mean, is this one that maybe worth looking at for a bit of a pullback, for a bit of a lower valuation than what it's currently trading at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, cautious investors may well want to take that approach. And maybe, you know, once the froth has gone out of the news today in the share price, it may come back a bit. But equally, I think I mentioned the group's economies of scale. You know, when you're a company the size of Chertsey, you've got wonderful economies of scale that you can leverage up. And of course, that will provide, I believe, a cushion for them for the next little while. But of course, if high food prices persist, and if there is a downturn in the economy to the point where we enter a recession, which, you know, is a possibility, then of course, that could change dramatically. And a company with the sort of leverage that Compass has could see a sell-off and a retraction very quickly. And that is always the risk. But I think for now, I think if you look at the backdrop for now, I think you've got a similar operating environment. And the company has as good as said that by rising or raising its guidance for the full year. So I think the company expects what for it are fairly benign operating conditions that will enable it to continue to generate the sort of profit margins it generated in the first half of the year. But yeah, that risk is always there. So investors holding the stock will want to bear that in mind and maybe stick a stop loss in at a level they're comfortable selling out at.
Alan, now let's move on to the final stock that we're going to discuss today. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that we held last week the Investment Trust Conference. One of the trusts there, Migo Opportunities, is what you call a trust of trust that looks for undervalued investment trusts in terms of the discount to NAV that they're currently trading on in the market. And they were outlining, you know, that their strategy of looking for trusts which underlying assets are worth a lot more than the current share price. And this isn't an investment trust we're going to discuss now. It's an investment company, but it's a similar story here, Alan, because there's a significant discount to what the company is valued at compared to the underlying value of the assets in the market, and that's Vela Technologies. Would you like to go into that in a little bit more detail, please?
Certainly. Vela Technologies are a London-listed company. The shares are currently trading at 0.29p or 29 pence, giving the company a market cap of 4.66 million, down from a year high of 7.5p. Now, the company, as you rightly say, John, is an investment company. It's invested into 12 companies. Eight investments are in profit, four are in negative territory. But equally, it's invested into eight listed companies and four unlisted companies. And it's the unlisted investments that are actually outperforming at the moment. But those really aren't being factored in. So the company has 900,000 cash on its books at present as well. I'm going to go through each listed company. Listeners will obviously be aware of these. Rural Broadband, the company's investment is showing a small loss there. Canova, of course, the cannabis company. Again, there's a loss showing there. Mode PLC, of course, we've spoken about Mode before, Jonathan. The company's showing a small loss there. And then we come to MTI Wireless Technologies. The company's in profit on that investment. Cornerstone, that's also in profit as well. North Coders. Now, North Coders announced a very strong set of full year results last week, and it was published across the network that we provide for Vela. And yesterday, and that investment is showing a healthy profit. Also, Skillcast PLC, the company has an investment there, which is just slightly underwater at the moment. But I think on the share price movement since the results were announced yesterday, there is a movement higher. And then there's a company on Aquis called iGrain, and iGrain is its arguable value gives the company a healthy gain on its investment. So from an investment listed investments of 1.738 million, the company is now showing a gain, an arguable fair value of 2.2 million. So we then come to the unlisted investments, and there are four companies here. WeShop, which is basically technology, social commerce technology. The company invested 427 there. There's a valuation there currently of 650,000. Then its largest investment into a company called SGS, where it's which is a COVID-19 treatment. Vela invested 2.35 million into that. It's currently worth 2.6 million, and it's also going to receive 8% from the future royalties of the sale of that. So that could really accelerate revenues going forward. Then there's a company called Aristech that Vela are invested into, 350,000 investment there, currently worth 437,500. The company really recently raised additional equity at £3 per share, and the valuation basically reflects the level at which the money was raised at. And then finally, a company called Ensilica, which is all to do with ASIC circuit chips. That's Applied Specific Integration Circuit, of course, or integrated circuits, of course. At the IPO level, Vela invested some 750,000. When the company comes to market, based on the IPO price, Ensilica will be worth 852,000. So that gives, from investment of 3.87 million, it gives a valuation of 4.5 million, 4.539 million. Total investments worth 6,754,000 plus the 900,000 cash gives the total asset value at 7.6 million. So you know, you take those net assets into account there with the number of shares in issue, you've got a valuation of 47 pence a share. So as you can see, at 29 pence, we are a long way short. We're about 35% down on that. And I know certainly with unlisted companies, some of those are marked back, but with the valuations the company has recently published and put out there, this company is fundamentally undervalued. Certainly a little bit on the board, the company I run, there's Nigel Fitzpatrick, the non-exec chairman, better known as Brent Fitzpatrick. Brent is a well-known advisor for companies, company acquisitions, funding, and flotations. Chairman of Global Marine Energy, currently chairman at Abel and Clyde Rubber Estates of Ceylon Limited. And also was awarded an MBE in the Queen's Honours Birthday List in 2012. James Normand, who's executive director, worked previously for 3i and has worked for as a non-exec chairman of All Active Asset Capital, and also was most recently full-time finance director at Pathfinder Minerals, aimless at Pathfinder Minerals, and is in an unremunerated capacity. He's active in the governance of the Church of England. And then Emma Wilson, also director on the board. She's been employed in senior finance positions for the past 20 or so years, and has her own accounting practice, Bailey Wilson. So a very strong board in place there. Very shrewd investments being made by the company, and I think investors need to take a good close look at this group. Go to the website, have a look at the companies that the group are invested in, and in particular, the investment portfolio and asset value, which shows this group are fundamentally undervalued. So pick the stock up now, and once the companies like Insilica come to market and we see further progress with the other three unlisted investments, then, of course, I think that will trigger a significant re-rating in the share price.
So you mentioned there potential liquidity events in terms of a listing for some of the private holdings there. Alan, is there sort of any indication of timescales for any of these companies? And indeed, you know, maybe is there sort of interest to maybe of a trade sale for some of those businesses? Because of course, that would be a real catalyst for the share price of Vela if that was to happen.
Well, I know WeShop have been. Have been sort of building and developing the offering rapidly, I believe that there will be a value event upcoming later in the year. But Insilica, of course, I mentioned Insilica, they're expected to IPO this month, so that is an imminent event that could trigger a re-rating in the valuation. As I say, I mean the. Vela invested $750,000 into Insilica at IPO price. It'll be worth $852,000. So there's an uplift there straight away. But I think also if you consider the listed companies that the company has investments, that Vela has investments in, you know, they, I don't think it reflects the true value in those either. If you just take if you take the listed valuations at the moment at $2,200. Then you add in the cash the company has. That's 2,200, 2.2 million. You then take the 900,000 cash. That's 3.1 million. And that means that at the current rating of 4.6 million, those unlisted investments, which are valued at 4.5 million, are being attributed a value by the market of just 1.5 million, which is nuts. You know, the Insilica float alone almost takes that into account. So there's an awful lot more value there that simply hasn't been recognised by the market.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I think, you know, as you've outlined there, Alan, there's two key points to that. First of all, diversification with the range of investments they have there within the technology sector is particularly attractive. And, you know, as we said at the beginning, that underlying discount as well is something that really should be looked at. So, as you mentioned, a potential catalyst later on this month. So maybe one to have a look at and keep an eye on around that event. So just as a recap of the stocks that we discussed today, first up was ITV with the ticker of ITV. It was then Compass Group with the ticker of CPG. And just then was Vela Technologies with a ticker of VELA. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a note to listeners, you know, long-term listeners of the podcast will be aware that before the pandemic, we were holding a number of investment events, and we've just penciled in the first of those after the pandemic. It's going to be held on the 30th of June. So do check out the event section of the UK Investor magazine in the next couple of weeks, because you'll be able to get yourself signed up to that. It'll be an investor presentation and a drinks reception afterwards. So look forward to hopefully seeing some of you there. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.